before America was even an idea. This land of plenty was home to many people, to British and French, to Dutch and Spanish, to Mexican, to countless Indian tribes. We all shared the same land. We didn't always get along, but over the centuries, what eventually bound us together, what made us all Americans, was not a matter of blood, it wasn't a matter of birth, it was faith and fidelity to the shared values that we all hold so dear.
Pleased to meet you. Hope you get my name.
Gotta hand it to that Mick Jagger, I'll tell you. It's amazing to me. Now, yesterday on the Savage Nation, I asked the question, is Obama the Frankenstein that the right wing has made him out to be, or is it just a projection of fantasies and racism? And we talked about that. I'm going to tell you what happened today that astounds me. I see that the House Republicans just minutes ago released a draft called A Pledge to America. It is 21 pages long. It's unveiled Thursday morning at a Virginia hardware store tomorrow morning. And they're going to give these points, 21 pages, I say, A Pledge to America, kind of a new version of the Contract on America, which was a good hokey thing that the Newt Gingrich cooked up 20 years ago, whenever it was, 94. And of the Contract for America, the gimmick that they used in the past, only one thing was actually passed, and that was to take away money from welfare mothers. But what the reason that I'm mentioning this as A Pledge to America is because it's strange to me, Michael Savage, that I, in my new book, which isn't even out, I just yesterday read to you, and look, I don't care what you think of me. I read you 10 points on the Savage Manifesto for Saving America. My book has 37 points for Saving America. And now the Republicans come out, and almost everything that is in my book, as God is my witness, is in the Republicans' Pledge to America. It's not in that order. Some of it is hidden. For example, if you search the Republicans' Pledge to America, you have to go to page like 15 to find anything about the borders. With me, close the borders is number one. You see, I'm not afraid of offending illegal aliens. They are. They're trying to have it both ways. But many of the things that they talk about, I agree with. Stop job-killing tax hikes. Well, who would disagree with that? Okay. Require congressional approval for any new federal regulation that would add to the deficit, whatever that means. Cutting spending. Repeal and replace health care. Very good. My point number two is defund and repeal Obamacare. That's a no-brainer. Now, wait a minute. Roll back non-discretionary spending to 2008 levels before TARP and stimulus. Okay, Michael Savage, point six, liquidate TARP. It's amazing to me. Establish strict budget caps to limit federal spending going forward. It's right out of my book, I'm telling you. I'm telling you, most of this is from my book. I am proud to tell you that the Republicans robbed from me again, once again. Bush stole a compassionate conservative and he got into the presidency. You can thank me or hate me for it. And now they're stealing my entire plan for trickle-up poverty under their own name, which is good, because as Lao Tzu said, it doesn't matter who gets credit for what you say or what you do, as long as what you say or what you do gets done. You see what I mean? Provide resources to troops. Who would argue with that? Fund missile defense. Who would argue with that? Enforce sanctions on Iran. Who would argue with that? So if you read the Republican bill, you know, it's very good stuff. Don't get me wrong. There's nothing wrong with it at all. It's fabulous. It's just too long. And I say that the Savage Manifesto for Saving America, Trickle-Up Poverty, again, the book isn't even available. And already I'm seeing the Republicans obviously got an advanced copy, because there's nobody in the Republican Party who can tell them better than I what the actual people think and want. And that's good, because as a minister without portfolio, Michael Savage knows what he's talking about. 1-800-4498. I didn't even plan on talking about this today. I was going to do a light day today, like flap less, coast more. Now, what does that mean? I was noticing that older birds flap less and coast more. And I was hoping that as I got older, I would be able to flap less and coast more. And I was going to talk about flapping less than coast. Did you notice how people get older, they get much more smooth and like what they achieve and how they speak? They like say it and they do it easy. Same with the old, my favorite bird is the pelican on the San Francisco Bay. The young birds flap a lot because they're learning how to coast. And the old birds flap very, very little, and they kind of run with the wind, you know, with the airs. So I say, because I saw Wagmore bark less in the back of someone I know, their car. It says Wagmore bark less. I thought that's cute. Very Bay Area. And I say flap less, coast more, steal it and make it into a bumper sticker now. Someone already stole my trickle-up poverty and made it into a bumper sticker. Okay, don't go. I don't want to get vicious. I want to keep it in. Sid Vicious is dead. Dorian, New York, welcome to the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Just started listening to your show, and I think it's tremendous that you're reading from the Republican Party's pledge of your points from your book that's not published yet. That is amazing, Michael. Your reach cross-country is so big that you're telling, I'm sorry, there's a train going by. You're telling them what to do, and they're listening. Because
yes, they are. That's right. No, it is true, and some of them really do mean to do the right thing. Some of them are the honorable kind of men. I'll give you an example. Yesterday, did you hear my show yesterday on WOR in New York and everywhere else, Dory? You heard it? Did you hear when Senator DeMint was on? Did you happen to catch that?
Not that part, no.
I knew I'd get a no. All right. But anyway, he was on yesterday in hour two. Senator DeMint is the kind of southern gentleman that if he was wearing a uniform and he was on a horse and he said charge, 1,000 men would follow him into a hail of bullets. He's that quiet southern gentleman that we all love. And those are the kind of men who are going to save America. It's not the loudmouth from Brooklyn, Billy's. You know what I'm saying? It's not like the Klein from South Florida who gave up Mr. West's Social Security number, those kind of gutter rats that the gerrymander job, the carpetbaggers, they used to call them. I would call them the carpetbaggers because it has something to do with whitefish and carp rather than carpet. But you'd have to understand what I'm saying when I talk about gefilte fish. They used to be known as carpetbaggers. I would call them carpbaggers today because a carp is a part of the mixture that makes a gefilte fish. But if you took it the wrong way, you're liable to think I'm not who I am. So as I say to you, now is the time for all good people to pay attention to the fact that the world is changing right under your feet. The average person is finally being heard. The real grassroots movement is actually occurring. And the left wing is going berserk because their rent-a-mobs cannot match the great numbers of real people and real voters and real workers and real earners. And I think that says it all. But the big story for me today and for my audience, if you're listening to me on a train in Pennsylvania Station or in a jail cell in Lewisburg Penitentiary, is that the Republicans have just come out with a preview of their pledge to America, and it's very good. And they're going to unveil it tomorrow morning at a Virginia hardware store. Don't you love that hokey thing buying a hardware? Come on, guys, why do you have to go to that level of charade? You know, there's one thing about the Republicans as opposed to the Democrats. The Republicans just don't understand theatrics. And that's because they have no connection whatsoever to the entertainment industry, which is a good thing in one way and a bad thing in another. I'm a guy who loves movies, and I understand drama and theatrics. If only these stiff Republicans could understand that you don't have to unveil a pledge to America in a hardware store, and the people can actually understand you anyway, we'd be a long way towards an adult nation. You know, I mean, let's stop already with the Disneyland hardware stores. That's for Obama, for God's sakes. With this document, we pledge to dedicate ourselves to the task of reconnecting our highest aspirations to the permanent truths of our founding by keeping faith with the values our nation was founded on, the principles we stand. I don't write that. See, that's the kind of stuff you get from a politician. Mine is much more down to earth in plain, you know, common sense, plain talk like I do on the radio. So I'm elated. Close the borders, defund Obamacare, institute a flat tax, privatize and regulate Wall Street, privatize the regulation of Wall Street and affirmative action, liquidate TARP, impose tariffs on China. By the way, there's not one mention so far as I can tell yet in the pledge to America from the Republicans to impose tariffs on China. Number 8 on mine is strike down the anchor babies law. Not one word from the Republicans on that. Use profiling to prevent terror attacks. I wrote they didn't. And you want to hear the best thing I ever wrote? Run the country like a business, not an empire. Wow, good one. But I'm 2 weeks out on the book. I can't even talk about it because it's like premature alliteration. You know what I'm saying? I can't do premature alliteration. If I do any more premature alliteration, you're going to walk away from the bedroom before the book even hits the bookstores. So I'd rather talk about anything else. God, life is good. People are wonderful. And people, well, how did that go? Remember the bumper sticker of the 70s? Life is, who remembers that bumper sticker? Remember the heyday of American prosperity when everybody thought the economy was actually doing well and it was actually not doing well? It was all a fake bubble created by Goldman Sachs. But we all benefited from it. Here's the funny part is I read the bloggers, get the money away from those bankers, why they created the housing bubble. These are the very people who flipped houses and condominiums for 5 years and thought that they were Donald Trump. These are the people who were making, you know, $50,000, $100,000 a flip, and already they were in the big leagues. They were going to, you know, Acapulco, and all of a sudden they were gigantic real estate speculators. But if it wasn't for the geniuses on Wall Street who manipulated the whole picture and created the bubble, you wouldn't have made 10 cents. You understand that? So, you know, we all rode with the bubble. Everyone made money on the bubble, not just the bankers. So now you're mad because the bubble collapsed. You know, it's the same with every other bubble, goes up, goes down. Be realistic about it. The bankers are like you and me in some way, and they're different than others. They just have more money in some cases, not all of them. Who is it who wrote? Whoever answers this question wins a free prize today. I'll send you a free cough drop, the Savage cough drop, which Abbott invented. Now someone will copyright that now. I'll end up with an ad tomorrow from a company, the Savage cough drop. But I'm going to send you a cough drop that I personally used, and you could put it, you can stick it to your wall. Are you ready for this one? The things people buy, I've never seen anything like it. Marilyn Monroe's brassiere was auctioned off 20 years ago. I paid $25,000 for that. I've never saw anything like this. You know, I could see Douglas MacArthur's corn cob pipe. That I could see in a frame. But Marilyn Monroe's brassiere, I don't understand what people buy for collectibilities. So I'm going to offer you a used cough drop if you can answer this question. The minute I come back, I'll remember the question I was going to ask you because I forgot it already. I'll be right back. Savage. It is the Savage Nation. Playing Sympathy for the Devil. I was playing it this morning at dawn in my convertible with the top down with Teddy. I don't think Teddy got the lyrics, but it was pretty nice. Fog. Picture Savage riding on a country road with the top down on a fog-ridden San Francisco back road morning with his dog. Because it happened once in the last 25 years this morning. Normally I'm asleep in the morning when the fog rolls in. I get up at 5 and then I go back to sleep saying, who gets up 15 hours before they go to work? You know, it's like the old Lenny Bruce joke. You know, I get up like a normal person. I want to go to work. There's nowhere to go. I don't go on the air till late in the day. So you can go off too early on it. There's nothing to do but go back to sleep. But I decided, you know, the truth is, people, you do have to take advantage of your life while you're alive. It finally dawned on me after all these decades. I sleep too much. I really always have. That's why I'm still living, incidentally. Sleep is the most underestimated health thing to do with health. The most unacknowledged aspect of health is sleep. I can safely say that. Even if, God forbid, I died right now on the air, which I hope doesn't happen, where you hear the last thing you hear is I'm talking, and then that's the end of the show. The mic goes over. The dog starts to bark, and you hear like sirens an hour later. Even if, God forbid, that happened, I'm telling you it's the sleep that saved me. And the bicycling, and the vitamin C, and the vitamin E, and the B vitamins, and the garlic, and the alcohol. God knows 100 other things. But how can you live without a sufficient amount of sleep? You know, the American, we work too hard. We really do. We should be lazier. And laziness is good. There's only so much you can do with your time. So, as you can see, I'm biding time right now. New York City, W.O.R. Marie, welcome to, where is Marie? Marie is on 9. Go ahead, please.
Michael?
Yes.
WG, hi. You're cracking me up today. We love you. I'm calling you from Schenectady, New York, and I did want to answer your question about the cough drop, but your voice is going, but we political comment.
How could you answer my question when I didn't even ask it? How could you give an answer?
Talking about the cough drop, about the
No, no, I said I would give away a used cough drop if anyone could answer the question, and then I went to a break and I didn't ask the question. So how do you know what I was going to ask? How can you have an answer already?
I don't know. All I can contribute is we love you, but look, Give us some comment on Cuomo and Paladino, and also...
Okay, now you're asking a good question. Paladino's going to win by 2 points. Cuomo is an old-line Democrat Party apparatchik. He's not that well-liked. He's just a continuation of the same old in New York. Paladino is a fresh face. Paladino is a Tea Party candidate. Paladino came out of the actual people. Paladino is the grassroots candidate. Cuomo is exactly what he's going to be. Let me answer it in a simple way. Who is Cuomo going to, now that he's desperate, to get support? None other than Mosque Mike. He's turning to Mosque Mike, the most hated mayor in American history. Can you imagine that? To show you how out of touch Cuomo is?
Michael, listen, he's going to take one of the vacant jobs that are occurring now as we speak in Washington, D.C. Michael,
Cuomo should instead take a job with Health and Human Services. Okay? That's really what he's suited for. He's not suited to be the governor of the state of New York, in my opinion.
Okay.
I believe Paladino would be a more honest governor. How do you like that? Less connected to the machine. Does that make sense to you?
Yes. Listen, this will not...
Thank you. All right, listen already. Listen, 8 times listen. I thought I was in my aunt's house. May God rest her soul. My aunt talked like that. Whatever you said, before you could finish the sentence, listen and listen. God bless the tough women. I love them. They're going to save America. It's not going to be you.
Savage.
Teddy, we're halfway through the first hour. Wake up, Teddy. Come on, you're a member. Actually, I spoke to my agent, and I said to him, do you represent dogs? I said, do you know that my dog is more famous than I am? I mean, look, I'm not a world-class celebrity. I know what a big celebrity is. For example, you take a guy like Sylvester Stallone. You could drop him in the middle of a forest in Brazil, I would know who he is. I understand what big celebrity is, but... I'm a minor celebrity, let's put it to you that way, but mainly as my voice and through my books. But if I walk the streets in San Francisco, and all I got to do is say one thing to the dog, like, Teddy, in a command voice, the head snap, and they say, is that dog just named Teddy? Yeah. Are you Michael Savage? Yes. Yeah. So the dog is always known first. I would say that the dog has a very good future as a celebrity. Right now, he doesn't even realize it. What could he buy? A new fur coat? What is he going to buy with the money? There's nothing he needs. That's the thing about money. What does a dog need that he doesn't have? Nothing. So the fact is that here we are, and as I said, flap less, coast more. Have you noticed my show has gotten better over the last few months? Do you know why? Because I'm flapping less and I'm coasting more. I've watched old guys sometimes, how efficiently they move or how efficiently they... Well, you know, it's very hard to describe. You ever watch an old boxer? I don't mean old boxer. There are no old boxers. In sports, I don't know if that analogy holds up because the guys break down very young. But there are professions where an individual will do things more with less energy, let's put it to you that way, and do it perfectly. Flap less, coast more. A painter, for example. I've told the story before. I don't want to beat this up. Let me take some callers. Ralph in Kansas City, you're on the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, God bless you and Teddy. Hey,
thank you.
I'm all trickled out on this trickle-up poverty stuff, so I'd like to change gears for just a second and ask you a question about something you talked about some months ago when you had a problem with that smell in your car.
Wait a minute, hold it. This is getting very personal. You're not referring to when I was a teenager in Alley Pond Park, are you?
No, sir, not Alley Pond or Ozone Park. I'm talking about your car.
Oh, you're fast. I should have said you're not referring to the fact when I was a teenager in Ozone Park. That would have been better. But okay, go on. You got me there.
You had a problem there with your car where you had a smell in it, and you took it to a place to try to get it out.
You don't mean the sports car where they detailed it and they did something with the seats with some smells that I couldn't get out of the leather. That one?
That's exactly it. You ever get that taken care of?
It did. It took almost 9 months of simply airing it out for it to leave the leather. 9 months. I thought I was going to have to throw the seats out.
That's a heck of a long time to take care of their screw-up.
Well, thank God you aren't referring to the earlier days in Ozone Park, Ralph. I would have been embarrassed by that one. Thank you for the call. Yeah, here we are. Why do I feel good? Something's wrong. I know something bad's about to happen. My father was from the old world, and he never, I don't think he ever felt good, the poor guy. I very much like him. It's terrible. But he was Russian, you know, Russian emigre. Nothing ever, he never expected anything good in his life. I mean, the guy came over at seven. Everything was hard for him, everything. And he struggled really a lot, you know. So he used to say to me, he used to lecture me, say, now look, he said, just when you think everything's going to go good, that's when the worst things happen. Oh, great, Dad. Is there any other advice you can give me about going forth in life that'll give me confidence to take the next step, Dad, the next bold step? You talk about putting the fear into somebody. And that is why I told you I wound up leaving the milieu of the seltzer bottle. That's why I left the seltzer oil cloth corn beef world, because I had to take a leap of faith into a whole new world. And that's how Hawaii, Fiji, Samoa, Tonga, I've been to islands you never heard of. And I wasn't just going there to play Baccarat. I wasn't going there to just sit and drink rum. I was collecting medicinal plants before you ever took a vitamin. So the fact is that it led me somewhere. I did something with it. Did it make me a fortune? No. I didn't do it for the fortune. I did it for other reasons. But it led to the pot of gold. That's a whole other story. Although those years were fruitless financially, they were murder. They were like crawling on glass. The years that I traveled in the islands, I did it on my own money. The children were young. It was hard, blah, blah, blah. And so it didn't lead to the pot of gold directly, but indirectly it did lead to the pot of gold. And what I'm saying to you is if you do follow your love, very often you will die of a heart attack and have nothing. That's what I'm trying to get at. Now, if I were a Republican, I would tell you if you follow your heart, everything will work out well in the end. But I don't believe in those books. Remember those self-help books? How to Win Friends and Influence People? Not one word of it is true. It doesn't work at all. I mean, if you don't have anything anyone wants, it doesn't matter how much you smile, they're not going to buy it. Yeah, I mean, a certain amount, but you know, you go through most of the world, men don't smile. Why is that? Why is it that throughout most of the world, men don't smile? They're grim. Did you ever look in the face of some of the illegal aliens? I mean, you know, let's not put them down. Just say illegal and alien. We know that they shouldn't be here in terms of benefits. We understand that. But do you see the grimness on the face of these guys from Mexico, El Salvador? Why do you think they look like that? Because they're working so hard. They're living in fear. They understand what life really is and how terrible it is. They don't live in the Mickey Mouse, Donald Duck world. Now, men, you know, most of us can learn from that. If American men can only understand the world that they're actually living in as opposed to the fantasy that they want to live in, then we could throw the bums out of Washington who are lying to us, and then we could put our hands together. And, you know, with the unity of the men in this country, believe me, these are the strongest, smartest men on the planet, the American people. With the unity that could be realized with what I just said to you, we could take on all the tyrants of the earth. What sane nation, I ask myself, would allow the Hitler of modern times to come to New York and give him the same protection as the President of the United States? Why in the world would we cater to a finicky fascist like Ahmadinejad, who allegedly brought his own food and his own chef to a Hilton hotel in Manhattan, and they stunk up the whole hotel? Read the New York Post today. I don't know whether they're slaughtering goats or whatever in the room. That I heard about years ago in the plaza. They used to come in from the Middle East, and they would slaughter animals in their room, and they would roast them in the room, and then they would like throw $100,000 in cash on the floor when they left. Like, you know, go ahead, you're an idiot, clean it up, fix the room. So nothing's really changed in that regard. And I don't really blame him that he doesn't want to eat the meat from Katz's Delicatessen. I mean, truthfully, if I were from Iran, I'd bring my own goat as well on a 737, an old 737, like an old Alitalia that I bought just for the goats to trail behind the other plane. But what nation on earth would give this guy this kind of respect? And you know, you got to hand it to Giuliani. Years ago, remember what he did when Arafat came to New York? That's when we still had leaders who didn't have moral equivalents. That's when we had a leader who said, he's not a good man. He said, Arafat's a gangster, he's a killer, he's a terrorist, and I'm not going to go respect him at the UN. We don't have one politician who said a word to Ahmadinejad. And the worst part of it was, is when I saw I have words for them, but it's a family show. The people who interviewed him, it made me sick. Here's a man who denied what was done to the Jewish people by Hitler and gets away with it. And he said, oh, it's a Zionist media. Well, where are the Zionists now that we need them? It's a Zionist media? Where are the Zionists now that we need them in the media? I don't see any. If it was a Zionist media, one of the Zionists would have said, excuse me, President of Iran, let me show you some pictures I happen to have here of Jews being killed at Babi Yar. Let me show you a video of it, because I happen to have it on my laptop, Mr. Ahmadinejad Hitler. That's what we would have today if we had one man left in the media with a pair of knishes. But we don't have any more. Nothing. We have Paris Hilton with a bow tie. We have Paris Hilton with a bow tie. We have Lindsay Lowdown with a bow tie. That's all we have left in the media. And so there we are. I say things as I see them. It gets me in trouble. I am banned from the excellent dental care of my British cousins can experience. I've been dying to go over there now for 2 years to have my teeth fixed, but unfortunately I won't be able to do that. And of course, I would have loved to have gone for a nice tour of the British cuisine, but that's not going to happen. What do you want to talk about in the Savage Nation? Let's go to Denver. Elise is on the air. Denver, Elise, what's on your mind?
Dr. Savage, I am a Brazilian immigrant that came here when I was 17 years old as an exchange student. I spoke no English at the time. My family still back in Brazil, very poor. It was a struggle to get here. I've always loved the U.S. I read your Liberalism is a Mental Disorder and completely fell in love with you and everything that you talk about.
There's truth in it. In other words, you probably see the world the same way. Weakness spells disaster in plain English. So what you had to find in yourself was the strength that you found it in my book. And so you say the guy's right? Everywhere I turn, I listen to these liberals. They're psychos because they don't know what they're talking about. More or less, isn't that what you're saying to me?
Yes, sir. That's exactly right. And I'm in the art field. That's my job today. I'm an art director. I struggle. I mean, 17 years of struggle to learn English, to learn the culture.
You speak a beautiful English. You speak a beautiful, beautiful English. Nobody would know you're not a native speaker. So I know how hard you worked at that. English is a very difficult language, Elsie.
It was, and I'm proud of it. I'm a U.S. citizen today. It was the proudest day of my life. I'll try to talk about without crying, but this is beautiful, and I don't think liberals and I don't think a lot of our politicians understand that this is a blessed land.
That's right. It is a blessed land. It has been the land of opportunity for countless tens of hundreds of millions of people who have come here and made a life for themselves and for their children, and they were willing to wait for the next generation if they couldn't have it themselves. Unfortunately, a lot of that has changed, and we have demagogues in office for quite a while now who have promised people the entire ball of wax, the great enchilada, the minute they get off the boat. And that's what changed things. They didn't say, you have to wait, your children will have it. They said, I'll give it all to you right now, even if I have to take it from the pigs who earned it themselves. That's what's going on, Elise. So are you the girl from Ipanema? Where are you from in Brazil?
São Paulo. So,
we're going to play it. Wait, we're going to play a tune for you. Play the tune for the girl from Ipanema.
Young and lovely, the girl from Ipanema goes walking.
Where is Ipanema, Elise? Where is Ipanema?
Rio de Janeiro.
Is Rio as beautiful as people say, or is it kind of a hellish place once you leave the beach?
It's both. Once you leave the tourist places, it's hell. And it's what everybody here doesn't understand. You don't have the same freedoms and economics, all that stuff. I mean, people lead hard, hard lives. And we don't know how good we have it here until you go to these places.
No, you don't. They don't understand that these people... I'll tell you what, you stay on the line. Stay on the line. We're going to get your address. We're sending you a free copy 2 weeks from now of Trickle Up Poverty. You're one of the few to get it. Can I say one thing? I'm not going to talk about the book. I told you I don't want to go off with a premature alliteration in any way. But I want to save it for the day of our marriage on October 5th when the book comes out in the bookstores. But I got to say this because I couldn't believe it. My producers told me today that they went on Amazon and they looked up some of my earlier books. They're selling for like $175 a copy. I couldn't believe it. Some of my early health books, people are selling now as collector's items, $150, $175. I can't believe I've lived long enough to see that happen. So I told you before, a lot of books come out and they're nothing but fluff between the covers with the guy's picture on it. I have never ever given you a book that wasn't, let us say, filled with important information. My first book, Earth Medicine, Earth Foods, is still in print. I wrote it it was published in 1972. I can remember the day I finished that book. You know, it's bringing back a memory. Can I have 1 minute of reverie? 1970 or 71, I am a graduate student. I have jobs. I'm trying to do this. I'm trying to do that. I'm trying to get my master's degree, my first degree. And I'm writing my first published book. I had a contract with Macmillan Publishing on American Indian Medicine, Earth Medicine, it's called. I remember working till a midnight one night on the book, writing and writing and writing, researching. And I had a wonderful professor. I loved the man. He was a professor of pharmacology who had left. He was a director of research at one of the major pharmaceutical firms in the Midwest. He had 1 year to go till he collected his pension. And he left a year before his pension. He said if he stayed there one more day, he would have died. He was turning gray from the corporate life in the Midwest. A wonderful man. Instead, he took a job in pharmacology at the University of Hawaii. I don't want to mention his name because perhaps his children listen, and I don't want to say anything that even they might like. Anyway, this guy and I, like, bonded. You know, he became, like, my idol because he was such a wonderful man and so intelligent. So it's already 11 o'clock at night. I'm working. The phone rings in the laboratory, and he says to me, "Michael, go home," he said. "You've worked long enough today." He had nothing to do with the book. He said, "Your wife is waiting for you at home." He said, "You have a small child. Go home." I mean, I remember it. I worked on that book. I can remember the desk I wrote on. Would you believe it? The things that you can remember in your life. So I remember my first book. I'm sorry for the reverie, but my mind is moving around now a little bit. It has nothing to do with politics. So if you want me to stay hard focused, I will. Flap less, coast more. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Welcome back to Michael Savage, the king of spontaneous political satire. No one writes my scripts. I'm looking at the GOP's plan, the glimpse. What do they call it tomorrow? America Speaking Out initiative. And, you know, there's really nothing in it about any social issues. The plan is divided by the Republicans into the economy, government spending, health care, government reform, and national security. All good. And all key points. There's virtually no mention, except as an afterthought, about the borders, number one. No mention of language, and not one word about our cultural meltdown. That shows you the problems with the Republican Party. And that's the differential between the Tea Parties, Michael Savage, and this Republican gimmick called America Speaking Out. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm all for everything they say in the America Speaking Out. But it only goes so far. It goes 60% towards what America really needs. I take it to the 100 percentile. Okay? Of course we're against job-killing tax hikes. Of course we want to rein in government red tape. But what does that mean? Nothing. Reduction in all federal spending. In my last book, I said cut federal spending by 20%. Don't you remember that? So there's nothing wrong with what they're saying. It says end TARP once and for all. That's a no-brainer. Repeal and replace health care reform law. Good. And on and on, and I'm not knocking it. I'm just saying it. There's no mention of language or culture in there, and very little about protecting our borders. So when you look at what the Republicans are releasing, you see why they're in as much trouble in a way as the Democrats, I'm sorry to tell you. Yes, I'd like to see the Republicans win to a certain extent. Not all of them, no. I could do without about 50% of them, okay? They could take a walk. They can go back to their corporate legal firms. Because I don't need Mrs. Snow from Maine. I don't need all the wobbly fake Republicans with zero conservatism. I want the rock rib Republicans like Jeff Sessions to run the party. I told you before, only a conservative that, and we're getting it. It didn't happen yet. You haven't seen the dirty tricks they're about to pull. We saw a hint of the dirty tricks in South Florida when the Knish there, the human Knish Klein, sent out a flyer publishing the social security number of a genuine war hero whose name you don't even know. He happens to be a man running as a Republican in South Florida, which is almost impossible. He happens to be an African American. He's a genuinely wonderful man. And Mr. Klein, the human carp, had the nerve to put out a flyer which gave out his opponent's social security number. That's the kind of tricks that I'm talking about, that the dirty rat street gutter Democrats are capable of, and they've just gotten started. That's all they know how to do is undermine. They know nothing about leadership. They know nothing about America's priorities. All they know how to do is hate and undermine. Hate and undermine. And then they get up and they say, oh, gee, there's so many bad people out there who are against what President Obama wants to do. They're so divisive. They're so racist. Let me tell you something. You can disagree with Obama from today until kingdom come, and it doesn't mean you're a racist. I can guarantee you that if you really poll the African-American community amongst the actual business owners, you'd find out most of them don't like Obama's policies.
Savage. Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Momentum is with us. We are out there to dispel many of the misrepresentations that have been going on for nearly 2 years by the Republicans and the special interest, whether it's the oil industry, the health insurance industry, the banks, and their allies. And we are out there. Our members are great, articulate spokespersons for their point of view into their districts. And district by district, we feel very confident about the election. And we believe that 6 weeks from today, we will have no regrets. But instead, we will have a great Democratic victory.
I went on essentially a plant-based diet. I live on
French fries.
Beans, legumes, vegetables, fruit.
Oh, yeah. All right. They all live on beans. Play Sympathy for the Devil. You hear this? Bill Clinton got the greens. Some of you understand. How crazy does this get? He's become the new Al Gore. He's reinvented himself as the Al Gore of the food world. Now Bill Clinton is walking around like he invented the diet, the plant-based diet. He discovered a plant-based diet all of a sudden after cheeseburger. Good luck to him. You know, that's like grasping for straws at a certain point. Can't hurt. But I told you about the turn it off already. It didn't work. I told you before, I'm an expert in this field. There is no guarantee that simply shifting to a plant-based diet is going to reverse atherosclerosis. Any more than if you give up your a Cadillac Escalade, you're going to reverse climate change. You know what I'm saying? It's like a hypothetical. It can't hurt you. You feel better. You lose some weight. Fine. But don't think you discovered what we were talking about and I was writing books about in 1972. There's a lot more to the whole atherosclerosis story than simply eating plant-based foods, Mr. Clinton. Now, Mr. Clinton, you and I certainly disagree politically. Actually, we may not disagree in some areas. Since you become a very wealthy man, I can guarantee you that in some areas we probably agree. But the fact is that nobody knows as much about health and nutrition as I do. Nobody on earth knows as much about it as I do. Nobody. Nobody, nobody, nobody. And I am telling you, I know of studies that many of the new doctors never even read. And so before you grasp at this magical mystery tour called plant-based diet, and beans, you know, you're looking for some hope out there that may not be realistic. And I have quoted yesterday the famous study that was in a book I wrote in 1978 called Nutrition Against Aging. I remember the study to this day. I can't quote the author. Major study of 17,000 railway workers in India. And they divided the group up between vegetarian and non-vegetarians in that sample. And it turned out that the vegetarians had a higher rate incidence of coronary heart disease, that is heart attacks, than the non-vegetarians. And you have to understand there's much more to the picture than simply going on a plant-based diet. And that was a revolutionary study that should be looked at, and many people don't understand that there's more to it than that. And that's why just eating beans, you're not going to unclog the arteries. As much as I'd like to think you can, and believe me, there was a time in my life when I believed all of that. So now it's no dairy, and you drink almond milk, wonderful. I don't like almond milk myself. In fact, I think it's indigestible. Nothing wrong with eating more legumes, vegetables, fruit. I can't eat beans. I'm allergic to beans. I don't have the enzymes for beans. Remember I did a whole show about a month ago or three, 4 weeks ago on fava bean hemolysis that some people don't have the correct... Well, hey, wait a minute. Today is Tuesday, isn't it? Wednesday? It's Wednesday. I don't want to talk about diet anymore. I want to talk about the Republican plan to save America, Hokum number two. Hokum two. You know, it's GOP 501. It's GOP Hokum two. They sold us the contract for America when Newt was in power. And of all of the plans, only one of them was passed, which was cutting welfare for the poorest of people. Now, the GOP plan is fine because no one will disagree with that. We need to save the economy, cut government spending, reduce the health care bill or turn it around, reform government and increase national security. Who could argue with that? But where in any of these plans did they talk about how to actually create profit for businesses? They don't even understand that. It's one thing to cut red tape. It's another thing to cut regulation. It's another thing to cut taxes. But where is the money supposed to come from, Mr. GOP, in order to wipe out the deficit that has been built up over the last 50 years? Where is it supposed to go? Where is it supposed to, who's going to generate that profit? You have to do much more than that. That's just on an economic level. You have to do a lot more than that to generate a healthy economy than just cut, cut, cut. That's all negative. It's all only one side of the moon. There's another side of the moon, and that is figuring out a way to make America profitable again. And the only way to make America profitable again is to start rebuilding the industries that were stolen from us by the Chinese, going back to the Bill Clinton administration, when they were buying whole factories and moving the entire factory to China to steal our technology. They stole tool and die companies, and they moved them to China, and then they put us out of the tool and die business. You think I don't know what went on in this country? You think it started with Obama? You're mistaken. He's just the latest in a long line of front men for much more powerful interests, in my humble opinion. And so, as I say to you, you want to create profit in America? Good, it's a good start if you'll actually do any of this, Mr. GOP. But now let's talk about rebuilding America's industrial base. Let's go back to brass tacks. Let's start making things in this country again other than websites. We need to do more than make websites and produce pornography called movies. Because when you break it down, no matter how entertaining it is, it's only pornography. That's basically America's number one industry today, which is pornography and entertainment. And the blur right now between the two is so overwhelming, it's hard to believe. So you want to really start making things? Make machine screws. Make steel. Why don't you protect the American steel industry again? Why don't you talk about how you can save the American steel industry? Why don't you talk about unlocking the coal in Utah that Bill Clinton locked up, the low-sulfur coal? Why don't you talk about making us energy independent by building nuclear power plants around America? You want to talk about making us energy independent of the Arabs? Build nuclear power plants like most Western nations have done. What I love about the Greens and all of these psychotic left-wing fools is they talk about you don't want to use oil, you don't want to use coal. And you can't use nuclear energy. Well, the French, who are very green, very left-wing, have a whole slew of nuclear power plants in France, don't they? We could certainly do that here. There's a lot more to saving America than simply cutting taxes and reducing regulation. No one is against those points. But believe me, the government spending area, the economic area, they're all well and good in the health care. We've heard it all before from the Republicans. How much of it do you actually think they're going to be able to achieve of this? Why don't they talk very much about the borders? Why don't they talk about putting troops on our border with Mexico? Why don't they talk about sacking Janet Napolitano? Why don't they talk about trying some of these individuals for crimes against America after they take power? You want to see things change? Well, you got to get tough with the people who are doing this to us right now. So if the GOP plan comes out tomorrow, it's more milquetoast. It sounds like another corporate plan. You know, with, PowerPoints that offend nobody, that everyone can agree with. That's not going to excite the electorate. Why don't you pick up a copy of Trickle Up Poverty? I'm sure that William Morrow will be happy to send it to you, Mr. Boehner. And then why don't you read from my book verbatim? I can guarantee you the Republicans would win in a slam dunk if you actually talked about borders, language, and culture, and you really told the people what they really needed to hear about how our very identity as a nation has been melted down. Why don't you refer to the national identity crisis? Where has our national identity gone, Mr. Republican? Why don't you talk about our national identity, which has been melted down because of the refusal on the part of the last three administrations or four administrations to protect our borders, to protect our language, and for God's sakes, to protect our culture? You don't even hear the word culture anymore. It's as though we don't have one. It's as though we don't even have a culture in America. You never heard of it. Certainly Obama doesn't know what America's culture is because he virtually doesn't even relate as an American. He does not relate as an American. Obama relates as somebody from another country, not another planet, from another country. He always makes references as though there's no such thing as an America. He says we're not bound by blood. We're not bound by soil. Well, what in the hell are we bound by? We're not bound by blood and soil as Americans? What are we bound by? Let's see, not by our blood, not by our soil, not by our borders. What the hell are we bound by? And he says, oh, the American ideals. And what are those ideals? To let people come in across the border and crap on us? To wave Mexican flags at sporting events and not even learn to speak the language? That's your idea of tolerance? How about tolerance for the people who let them come over the border? So as I say to you, my friends, there's much more to be talked about than simply this hokum called the Republican plan here. I don't believe about much of it. How about term limits? How about term limits? How about cutting the retirement benefits that government workers get? How about firing 30% of all federal employees and let them feel what the average American is feeling who doesn't have a job? Just take a 30% axe across every department in the federal government, and then you will see things happen in this country. And so you say, well, okay, you're being harsh on the Republicans. Would you rather see Nancy Pelosi get back in power? No, of course not. But I will tell you that Obama is the most divisive man in the history of this republic. Here is a man who is constantly trying to divide and conquer. He turns one group against another. He went the other day, last weekend, to a Hispanic caucus, whatever that is, and he tells them that the Mexicans, amongst others, were here before anyone else. Now, I want to ask the listeners of this show, Democrat, Republican, Independent, can anyone listening to the Savage Nation tell me how saying that to a Hispanic separatist group advances unity in this country? Can anyone listening to the Savage Nation tell me how that helps heal the wounds of the past? Can anyone listening to this show tell me how that helps serve the interests of the United States of America? No, you can't. You can't. Mr. Obama is wrong historically. He's wrong factually. It doesn't matter what groups or peoples may have hunted and gathered on these lands, because you can go to virtually any land on the planet and you will find tribes and groups that occupied those lands, but they did not define those lands as a nation. You want to go back even further, you will find that Neolithic tribes migrated and roamed and hunted and gathered, but they did not define themselves as a nation in the ancient past. No, the concept of nationhood is something quite new and something quite alien to the internationalists who put Obama in power. Several hundred years ago, there was a nation founded called the United States of America, and it was founded on principles other than those of mere presence, Mr. Obama. But I expect that this demagogue will keep on going, telling us that we're not really Americans, that we're not really defined by our borders, language, and culture. And that's why I say Mr. Obama is probably the most divisive president in American history. You see, instinctually, the American people are a very good people. The American people are a trusting people. The American people happen to be the most tolerant people that the world has ever seen. The American people will take almost anything from anybody. But in their hearts, we, the American people, know that we were given the short end of the stick with President Obama. We know that we were tricked by George Soros and a lot of other foreign interests and foreign money. We also know that the man they put in power has tried from the day he took office to divide this nation. Yes, we know that. America has come to understand, by the way, what Obama means by the word transformational. We actually understand now what Obama means when he says he wants to be a transformational president. That's a nice word. that they probably used a lot at Harvard beer busts. He says, we're going to be transformational when we take over America. Me and Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid, we're going to be transformational. What exactly does that mean? Is everything that is transformed, transformed for the common good, Mr. Obama? Or are sometimes, is it sometimes true that transformational can lead to evil or bad? Well, let's look at other nations and let's see what transformational meant then. I'll be right back to explain that. It is the Savage Nation. You know, I went into a dialogue, or monologue rather, on Obama the Divider, and I got to the point of talking about his concept of transformation or transformational, because it's a code word for something very, very dangerous. Dangerous is the word I'm looking for, because what do you mean by transformational, and is everything that is transformed necessarily transformed into something better? And I said to you before the break, can transformational sometimes lead to something bad in a society? Well, let's look at other nations. You see, there was once an Austrian who transformed Germany from a republic into a dictatorship. What Adolf Hitler did was actually transformational for his time. Would anyone argue that what he did was for the common good? No. Well, how about what the Ottoman Turks did after they invaded and sacked the Christian lands of the Middle East? For example, what happened when they invaded Turkey? Turkey had been a Christian nation for over 1,000 years. And the Ottoman Muslims invaded and sacked the area called Turkey, and they transformed it. It was transformational. Was that for the good, or was it for the bad? They killed millions of Armenians in Armenia. They transformed Armenia for good. Was that for the common good, or for the common bad? I'm asking a question for which there's a good answer. And so as I say to you, watch out for those who promise you transformationalism. It may lead you to a throwback state that you're not even aware will emerge. No, Mr. Obama, just because you want to drag us backwards several hundred years doesn't mean we, the American people, want to go there with you. And just because you may want to tear off a piece of the Southwest and give it back to Mexico, to Maldef and La Raza, doesn't mean that the people of Arizona, Texas, and California are going to suddenly give up their heritage because you want to throw it all back and give it all away in the name of your transformationalism. Mr. Obama, men died to create the United States of America. Greater men than you, I might say, Mr. Obama. Men who gave their lives to define this nation by its borders, language, and culture. Now, that is a monologue I wrote specifically for this program. It would sound great on C-SPAN, wouldn't it, if I were a senator in a late-night session? But I'm not a senator, and this is not a late-night session. I'm merely an American. I'm merely a talk show host. And this comes to you live on AM radio. And you can take of it what you will. But watch out for the word transform and transformational. It may lead you to an area you can never come back from. When I come back from this quick break, we're going to have Rick Santelli on because it's Wednesday and we're talking about the economy. Rick Santelli was criticized, as you know, by the transformational president the other day.
Savage.
Mr. President, if I was to ask an investor, would he invest in a company that for every dollar spent, it had to borrow 42 cents, I think that investor would think long and hard. Now, if you look at the amount of money the government takes in, what we are spending, those are pretty much the numbers for our government right now. Does it bother you that 42 cents of every dollar we are spending is borrowed, even understanding that we have to deficit spend during tough times? How long can the U.S. continue to spend in that fashion without potentially hurting our long-term financial health?
That was Rick Santelli asking a question of President Obama the other day. And joining us now is none other than the infamous Rick Santelli of CNBC. Rick, welcome back to the Savage Nation. So you have become a household name more so now than ever. Isn't that true?
Well, some would say that's true, I guess. You know, I'm pretty much tied up all day trying to watch the markets, and I don't really get to view it from that direction. Somebody that follows the markets like I do. It's pretty much minute by minute. But yes, I.
But the president took umbrage with what you said when you asked him about the deficit spending, and then he sneered about your Tea Party comment back in February of 2009. But the fact is that Larry Summers has now left the administration. Christina Roma left a few weeks ago. Peter Orszag has left. What is going on with Obama's economic team, Mr. Santelli?
Well, you know, I think let's look at the Chicago Cubs or any team. If you're not doing well, what usually happens, Mike?
Yep.
You get rid of the manager, you get rid of the coaches, and I think that's part of the process going on here. With regard to the mortgage programs or some of the issues you just raised, you know, the proof's in the pudding. We did our rant that was really about home modifications, paying the mortgages for those that took out more house than they could afford, and the list starts there. There's a variety of reasons why people over-leverage themselves. But whatever the reasons, modifications aren't a financially prudent way to fix the problem. And a year and a half later, we saw a statistic last month I found very interesting. The largest record amount of bank foreclosures, August 2010, just last month. Record amount. And we spent how many billions of dollars? And these are our results.
But where did the money go? In other words, they threw $1 trillion at the economy. Where did it actually go?
Well, some of the Recovery Act, or the stimulus, as we're calling it, not to be confused with TARP, which was its predecessor, a lot of that, close to $800 billion, so rounded up to a trillion. I think it did get closer. I believe about a third of that is still not spent, maybe a little bit more. And a lot of the other monies were spent to pay federal and some state employees, of course, teachers, firemen. And I'm not saying that we shouldn't pay these types of people for their jobs. But the issue is, if you're going to pay for it, you better have a plan of how you're going to allocate your capital and be forthright with where it's going when you are borrowing 42 cents of every single dollar you spend.
Rick, I live in San Francisco, so when I drive over Doyle Drive, it's torn to shreds. There's cranes working around the clock. They're rebuilding a causeway, in essence, or a roadway. This must cost, I don't know how much it cost, $200 billion. I have no idea where the money is. Is this part of the road infrastructure rebuilding we're seeing in America? Is it going into roads?
At the end of the day, all this money we spent, let's round it to a trillion when it's all gone. I'd like to at least see something tangible done. A lot of the money was wasted in the form of, and I don't want to besmirch the administration, but it is what it is. We constantly read $400,000 per job, or some even higher, some $200,000 per job. That's not a good rate of return. We would never spend our own money that way and be pleased with the results. And you know what? That's really what this is all about. It's simple, Mike. You want people in Washington, when they spend $1 million, we want them to pretend it's their $1 million.
Mm-hmm. Good luck. Well, you know, but Rick, my father lived through the Depression. He's gone a long time, 30 years, but he told me that he survived during the Great Depression because of Franklin Delano Roosevelt's WPA, Work Product Progress Administration. He got a job as a chauffeur or something for a senator or an aide. I don't know what he did. But that job kept him going. So if jobs were actually created with some of this money, I don't think people would be complaining as much. But where are the jobs? Where did the money actually go?
Getting a road, if you're getting a Hoover Dam, you know, these are big projects. Now, I'm still not saying infrastructure is the best return on a dollar, but I understand these are extreme times. But, Mike, the numbers don't bear out. We're getting good return. As I said, I am not against helping people when they need help, but I'm for doing it in a responsible fashion. Make sure that this money we're throwing around, that the majority of the work isn't done appropriating it and then considered job done.
No, I understand. Like, even if the money went out, as during the Great Depression, you look at some of the great murals that were done in the 1930s. They were done by artists, paid for by the government. They put artists to work, but they put real artists to work. They paid writers to write real novels. I wouldn't even argue with that if that was part of it. I didn't say the majority of it. Put the plumbers to work, put the electricians to work, put the carpenters to work. But I don't see that going on, so I keep raising the question, Rick. Where did the $500 billion go? Let's say it's only $500 was spent. Where is it? Where'd the money go?
Talk teachers and firemen. Here's another issue that's important, okay? Don't call it a shovel-ready, going to keep the unemployment rate under 8.5%. In other words, this money is going to go out the door in what one would perceive in a stimulative fashion. Just the notion alone that we have this much still sitting around this far after the fact, that shows you that we weren't given the right information. And a lot of what's wrong is a communication, but not because the public doesn't understand what our leaders are telling us, but because, for whatever reason, they don't tell us exactly the way things turn out to be.
We're speaking with Rick Santelli of CNBC on The Savage Nation. So, Rick, gold is going up right now. What do you think about gold yourself?
Well, anybody out there, listeners, that has ever read any of the Ayn Rand books, Fountainhead, Atlas Shrugged, there's always a sub-theme of buying gold. And it's in the context that, at the end of the day, if gold was easy to pass around to buy things, obviously
yes.
It would be the best form of currency. Why?
Yes.
Really, if everybody uses gold, there is no inflation, yes. There is no deflation, there's nobody
right.
Changing its value. But we
right.
Can't really do that. So I think it is a good investment because, for the reason I just mentioned, we have deflationary issues. Will probably be followed by inflation because governments fool around with the paper, and that's what it is, and behind it is the full faith and credit of whatever government. The dollar, our government, the Japanese yen, the Japanese, who, by the way, last week intervened to try to set a price of their currency. So, you know, what does that leave one with if we are just at the whim of changes in direction of some finance minister? I think, you know, not having an opinion whether I would ever recommend intervention, gold is superfluous to that. So I think it's a surrogate currency, and it's also insurance that some of these government programs aren't going to end well, and things are going to get a bit worse, and probably the dollar value gets lower.
Okay, now here's a contentious point. I think we disagreed about this last week. You're more in tune with the markets than I am. I'm simply a talk show host, but I have some knowledge of money and some knowledge of finance as an individual in America who has saved all of my life and spent very frugally. I've held on to a lot of my money, okay? And I know what to do with it and what not to do with it. Why, as a free trader, can we not say to China, since you won't play fairly, we're going to put a tariff on your goods? Yes, I mean, I understand it could set off a trade war in the sense that they can retaliate and put a tariff on our goods. But at what point do we stop taking it and start giving it back, in essence, Rick?
You know, we're not that far off on this debate, but it's really, we can make it very simple. It's a timing issue. See, Mike, during the good years, many administrations have ignored fine-tuning various trade agreements that were deficient in many ways. But when you are in economic constraint, as this government is, as a lot of governments are right now, it's a bad time because China's holding many of the cards, and they're certainly holding much of our debt.
Right.
Not a good time to be poking a stick at them. But
right.
The issue is that it's called competitive devaluations. And whether it's tariffs, protectionism, lowering one's currency like the Japanese want to do so their imports are cheaper and they sell more than some other country exporting, those are beggar thy neighbor issues that were in the 1930s, maybe the worst issue that lengthened the time of the Depression. So these things don't end well. You need to do it when times are better, and if you're going to fool around with them, you should probably look at a broad range of issues and really do some discussion before just pulling a couple of gears out of this very complicated mechanism at these hard times and expect, you know, there could be very bad unintended consequences.
No, I understand that. It could lead to war, for God's sakes. It did before. And that leads me to the next question, because this is a very, very dangerous issue. In the past, when nations have gotten into trouble, they've gone to war in order to stimulate the economy. Let's be very clear. That's happened before. What do you think the likelihood is of that happening again in this country?
You know, there's so many ways to look at this. It gets tied up between manufacturing, governments, militaries, and yes, maybe there are interpretations that many wars were started almost from a business standpoint behind the scenes. But whatever the reason, it's something I think I wouldn't stay up nights worrying about necessarily. I think that one thing we've learned from some of the wars that we've been through and are still in the Mideast is that the war has gone high-tech, and there's a different set of financial variables. It isn't as much about the individual soldiers anymore, and the numbers are much smaller.
Well, but there's still an awful lot of many fortunes being made on contracting. Let's not forget the the scams going on from Iraq to Afghanistan. It's horrible, but that's a separate story. Economically, Rick, if you were hired to replace Larry Summers, or you were to recommend someone to replace Larry Summers for Mr. Obama, who would it be and what policies would you say they should follow?
I know exactly who I'd pick, but there isn't a chance, of course, he would get picked. I would pick Art Laffer.
Who is he?
Art Laffer is an economist, spent time in the Reagan White House. I'm not sure of all the other issues prior to that, but he's a frequent guest on CNBC. But what he's most noted for is some of his work regarding taxation, various tax rates, and how it may or may not affect job creation and revenues taken in by the government. And he's most famous for what's called the Laffer curve, which means that if you lower marginal tax rates, that you will actually not only incentive entrepreneurs to potentially try to make more money and create more jobs, you'll bring in more tax revenues and vice versa, which is right at the epicenter of the current debate, that raising taxes has the opposite effect and ultimately
yes.
could lead to less.
But why is it that, but you know, Rick, I agree with you because the person who doesn't own a business or doesn't work for himself doesn't understand that when you tax those who own a business or work for themselves, you're disincentivizing them to go ahead and create new jobs or expand. They don't understand that. The average person who works for someone who holds a regular job does not understand that raising taxes on the so-called rich backfires. Why don't they understand that?
You know, it's embedded in politics. We understand what's going on here, Mike, that you have a certain base that doesn't want low taxes. They'd rather take in more money because, the Democratic Party, one of its platforms, of course, is that they believe they can maximize spending tax dollars more wisely than the entrepreneurs. Okay, and of course, the conservative side, the Republican side, more generalizing here, don't. But don't even make it a negative. It's not that we're taking away a motivation. Look at it in a positive. By an individual who wants to get into a business, if his outlook in the future is that there is going to be a period, a prolonged and very transparent, non-changing period of lower taxes, he is going to be incentive to do things. So, you know, I like to keep things a positive. I think this administration needs to look at it in that fashion. And when I hear 250,000 synonymous with millions and billions, 250 grand's a lot of money, but they're not synonymous. So right off the bat, I think there are issues there. And last I looked, somewhere between 3.5 and 4% of the 140 million tax returns filed are small businesses in that 250,000 and higher camp. That's a lot of
I see. So, well, yeah, everyone's going to pay more taxes who actually works for a living under the Obama, if he lets the tax, the Bush tax cuts expire. What do you think is the likelihood that the Democrats have finally understood what really is going to happen and they're going to let these tax cuts continue through the next year? You think that's a possibility under Nancy Pelosi?
You know, I think after November 2nd, a lot of these variables change rather dramatically, and that's
right.
My opinion.
Sure, if the Democrats get thrown out in great numbers, they're going to certainly change course. Last thing, Rick, I can't help this. I have a line in my new book, Trickle Up Poverty, run the country like a business, not an empire. I'm sure you would like to see that done. I mean, if we had politicians who were running the country like a business, don't you think we'd be better off economically?
Oh, absolutely. But we do need to draw a line here because whenever I get in this conversation, there's blogging activity that governments aren't businesses, and there's a certain amount of responsibility government does have for society. And I think we are handicapping right now not only what that is, but how to prudently get a good return. If people are out of work, try to come up with ways to, if you're going to, as you said, put them to work, whether it's building roads or what have you, try to privatize the hiring process so half the workers have to be helpers or somehow be trained. So at the end of the day, you're raising up the workforce and putting them in jobs with newer and better skills. This is a skill issue. I personally think if I could give a message to the current administration, it would be this, that our high unemployment of many of these people are now unemployable. Their skills are
yes.
no longer needed. We need
yes.
to worry about retraining if we're going to spend this amount of money.
Rick, you know, many years ago, I was a poor graduate student, and I met a very wealthy man from Hong Kong. He was a billionaire, and I tried to get a grant from him, and you know what he said to me? He said, I don't believe in giving out money. He said, I learned when I was a young boy and poor that you should give a man a fishing rod, not a fish. You've heard that, I'm sure. I think that's something that's been lost on the average man. Don't you think we ought to give millions of people a fishing rod instead of giving them a fish every day from the government?
Mike, if I was there, I'd shake your hand, because listeners, make sure you Google the rant, February 19th, 2009, because I used another phrase, Mike, that's pretty much like that. I said, are we going to reward those who drink the water or those who carry the water? And what that really, I mean, that does say it all. In the end, I have no problem raising more generations of water carriers, and I will, you know what, if there was a referendum for America, would you pay higher taxes if you were guaranteed that half of the unemployed would get a new skill set? It would cost you for a few years, but then they would be self-sufficient, self-sustaining, contributing members of society. Hey, Mike, do you think that our society would go along with that?
Well, go try to get people who have not been working and just collecting on the government dole to do anything. Rick Santelli, I want to thank you very much for being with us on Finance Wednesday on the Savage Nation. As usual, incredible. Great information. Rick Santelli of CNBC, this is the Savage Nation. And again, I want to say, yeah, give him a fishing rod, not a fish. I'll be right back.
Savage.
All right, look, you know, Rick was on the show. It excited the lines. It's Wednesdays. I do finance. Tomorrow I do nutrition. And incidentally, I now found the study from 1977 on the Indian Railway study. And I'm going to have some shocking news for those of you who think that simply eating vegetarian is going to reverse your heart disease. I'm sorry to tell you it's not so. There's a lot more to it. My friend Peter Chalka found the study and sent it to me. I remember the study very well. I'll have all the information about that tomorrow. As usual, more information than you can probably get anywhere else on the Savage Nation. This just came out from the Washington Post. Terror threat most significant since 9/11. Al-Qaeda is likely to attempt small terrorist attacks in America. Now, let me ask you something. Why do you think this came out today in a Senate hearing on intelligence? That suddenly we're supposed to be attacked by small-scale attacks, nothing catastrophic? I'll give you Mike's opinion, since that's what you're tuning in for. I told you that there might be an October surprise, which would be America showing the nerve to go to war and take out Iran's nuclear capacity. That ain't going to happen. We're going to see it in reverse. They're going to let them attack us. So they figured that you'll rally around the Democrats out of fear. That's one theory, isn't it? It's simply a theory. And I hope I am wrong. In fact, I pray that I'm wrong. But I fear the government media complex signaling today in a Senate hearing that most significant since 9/11 terror threat here in America. Why all of a sudden is that the October surprise? So we get frightened and we vote the Democrats in? I pray to God it's not their strategy. But knowing how they think, anything is possible.
Savage. Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Divider, part one. Now, look, I really believe Obama is the most divisive man in the presidency, perhaps in the history of this republic. Here is a guy who is constantly trying to divide and conquer. He turns one group against another. Look, he went to a brown supremacist group, the Hispanic Caucus, And he tells them that Mexicans were amongst the first groups ever here. Now, can anyone listening to this show tell me how that advances unity or togetherness in this country? Can anyone listening to the Savage Nation tell me how Obama's words help heal the wounds of the past? Can anyone tell me how that helps serve the interests of the United States of America? The fact of the matter is the United States of America declared its independence in 1776, while Mexico was recognized later in 1821. So he's wrong historically as well. It also doesn't matter which people or groups may have migrated and hunted and gathered on a land, because you can go to virtually any land on the globe and you will find that tribes had occupied those lands, but they didn't define the nation. You go back further and you find that Neolithic tribes roamed the earth, but they didn't define a nation in the ancient past. Nor did roving migrant bands define a nation as near as several hundred years ago. Mr. Obama, a nation is founded on other things than mere presence. It is founded on borders, language, and culture, a national identity that's something you would know nothing about, being a transformational internationalist. Now, I expect nothing less from a demagogue. Mr. Obama seems to be a demagogue by any definition. Why do I say that? Because the American people are fundamentally a good people. They are trusting people. They're a tolerant people. They'll accept virtually anything. But in their hearts, they know one thing from another, and they know that they got the short end of the stick with Mr. Obama. They know that they were tricked by George Soros and a lot of other foreign money. They also know that this man has tried to divide this country from the minute he took office. 1-800-449-8255. I'm getting a sore throat. The minute I'm off the air, I'm going to have an 18-year-old scotch. I'm going to tell you my friend to him. I don't even like scotch. I hate this stuff. I can't stand it. I'm a beer drinker. I have New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc. I love it. Marlboro. I mixed that three wine coolers. It was half wine, half club soda with, it was good, three of them. So what does it add up to? An ounce and a half of alcohol, big deal. Made me more mellow for the party. I'm a very high-strung guy. That's how I am. That's how I am. That's how I perform. So I wrote 27 books. What do you think, I'm like you? I don't play golf runs. But the point is, because the throat hurts me, tonight it's going to be... A guy told me this who didn't even drink. He survived World War II. He's still alive. And what he told me was, every time he had a tinge of a sore throat, he would take scotch and basically gargle it. He would let it sit on the back of his throat and then you know, spit it out. He wouldn't even drink it. He's a teetotaler. He's 85 years old. And you know it works. I swear to God. I mean, I use all the other stuff, the zinc drops, the vitamin C. I got echinacea propolis. It's all good. It all works for me. But I swear to God, they must do something. But tonight, instead of spitting it out, I think I'll swallow it. That's all. I'm going to go right down. In other words, why spit it out? It's 18 years old. The Scotch people, look how hard they worked on it. I'm not a socialist. Why spit out good Scotch? You know what I'm saying? Yeah. It's like Clinton said he did all. Right after the show, I'm talking bingo. Right to the sink. Cuban food. Cuban. Grouper fish. I don't eat the beans. I told you on the nutrition show, I lacked the enzymes necessary. Thank God to break down beans. You don't want to be, but the point is, I'm not good with the many. And that's where the gas comes from, if you don't have the proper enzyme. You shouldn't eat it to begin with. That's all. You don't have the enzymes for the beans. Don't eat them. Maybe you're designed for a high meat diet. There are people who were designed for a very high animal protein diet, incidentally. They live to 96, some of them. Yeah, I've met them. That's all. Meat and potatoes, they don't touch a salad. In fact, I was going to tell you this. I did the nutrition trips. I went into that book, the Skeptical Nutritionist, that I was reading from my own book. And I found a postscript. It said, postscript on a trip to Panama. And it was about how I went on a ship. And the book's already going to the printer. And I meet a guy, 78 years old, in perfect shape. Lean, trim, tan, never looked better. And I ask him what his diet is. He says, don't look to me because I eat only meat and potatoes. I hate vegetables, never ate one. I get sick at the thought of eating anything that's green. And I smoke cigars. I said, oh, my God. So I said I wanted to throw the book manuscript in the garbage. But then I thought about it, and I realized he's what I called a nutritional rogue. So don't generalize about people who basically have an inherited the longevity gene to be a, you know, a person who lives to 100 or 90. There are people with genes like that. You know that. I'm not one of them. Most of us are not like that. And you certainly shouldn't use the octogenarian's diet as an example of what you should be doing. You would have been dead at 46, some of you, if you followed that kind of thinking. You can't do it. You can't do it. So there are nutritional rogues. It doesn't mean that all the nutritional advice is faulty. It isn't. It is not faulty. It's life-saving. I wouldn't be here if I didn't follow it. I do practice what I preach the best I can. That's all. Majority of Americans losing faith in Obama. That's a sad story. Because he's a young man. He's a young man. He wasn't given a chance. And it was the white cracker racists in the Tea Party and those nasty Republicans who stood in his way. I mean, if you listen to CNN and the New York Times, if only there was a single-party system, Obama would be very popular. You know, I mean, you know, let's be fair about it. If Obama could only have rounded up all of the opponents of his socialist policies and put them into internment camps, his popularity would be 100%. Just think about that. It's those nasty people, the crackers in the Tea Party, who oppose him. So when you read a majority of Americans losing faith in Obama, you got to take that with a grain of, well, I guess, salt. You got to realize it's because of this nasty, disgusting two-party system that those white racist founding father crackers created. Think about it. That's right. They created a cracker system called a two-party system, by gosh. That's not democracy. True democracy is electing an unknown man with shady money past from Chicago and giving him absolute power with no checks and balances. And then you'll see if this man could perform without these stupid people on the right always putting him down. I mean, he's trying hard. Him and Michelle mean well. So what did she drink champagne and eat caviar in the White House at your expense and has more personal assistance than any first lady in history? That shouldn't matter. She's making up for past iniquities. She's making up for past iniquities in the system, so she's personally enjoying it. That's the important thing. It's not that the sharecropper's grandchild enjoys it somewhere in Mississippi. What's important is that she enjoys it and he enjoys riding around in Air Force One. And these crackers who are putting him down, they're the real problem. If only this wasn't owned by a cracker nation and a cracker press, Obama's ratings would be 90, 100%, maybe 110%, like in Uganda under Idi Amin, where there was no opposition. Or if he get Fidel Castro, where there was no opposition. That's the problem. The problem is that the country has not yet got that private civilian national security force that Obama talked about during the election, run by his own people, people he can trust, a private national security force just as big, just as powerful, and just as well-funded as the U.S. military. How can liberals with mental disorders this advanced be treated? Is there a medication? Or in fact, is this show, The Savage Nation, the best therapy?
Savage.
Actually, my own monologue here, Obama the Divider, and I'll give you the second part of it on the Savage Nation. What do I mean by that? Well, we've all come to understand what transformational actually means with respect to Obama. Remember he said he wants to be a transformational figure? Well, now that's a nice word that would be used at Harvard over a beer bust. What does transformational mean? Is everything that is transformed for the common good, Mr. Obama? Or sometimes are things transformed that are bad or evil? Well, let's look at other nations and see what transformational meant there. There once was an Austrian who transformed Germany from a republic into a dictatorship. And what this Austrian, Adolf Hitler, did was also transformational. No one can argue that what he did was for the common good. Well, now let's look at what happened when the Ottoman Turks invaded and sacked the ancient Middle Eastern lands that were once Christian. Well, they transformed those lands. They killed millions of Armenians. They imposed Sharia law. Shall we say that was transformational and that was good? Or was it bad? Is it a good thing to put a woman in a full-body tent? Is it a good thing to harm women and homosexuals that some of the throwback nations do under the name of their religion? Well, they're considered transformational by the radicals amongst them. I say most Americans will not follow Mr. Obama. I will say just because he wants to drag us backwards doesn't mean we want to go there. And just because he wants to tear off a piece of the Southwest and give it back to Mexico doesn't mean that the people of Arizona, Texas, and California are going to suddenly give up their heritage because he wants to throw it all back and give it all away. You see, Mr. Obama, men died to create the United States of America. Greater men than you, my friend. They gave their lives to define this nation by its borders, language, and culture. This is one man's opinion on the Savage Nation. We'll keep talking about this and other topics on the show today, but let's stop for a minute. I know you listen because this is one of the last places you can get real, honest, independent, conservative opinions and unfiltered news. And I want you to get the full impact of the Savage Nation. Go to TRN1.com, become a premium member, and get Savage Live, Savage Archives, and the Savage Podcast at TRN1.com. Click on my picture at TRN1.com today. I don't want to get too emotional about it, but this is a very symbiotic business. After a certain number of years, when you have an audience and they like you, you like them, it's very much like going into a cafe with them. I used to have a shtick on my show years ago. I had a local show when I started calling Cafe Savage. Someone will rip it off tomorrow, but they can't do it, so I don't care. You can imitate some of it. You can't duplicate it, so it doesn't matter what they steal. Everyone tries the New York voice. No, they all try to act like they're a truck driver. They wonder why people don't take them seriously. You can't fake it. I'm a man of the people and a man of the streets with a high education, with a great deal of experience, so they don't need the New York street thing in order, you know. But if you go on the, hey, Uncle Jay, how you doing? You know how many guys send tapes in like that to my syndicator? They think that's going to get them on the radio. Hey, how you doing, Mickey? Blah, 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 blah. That's not what radio's about. That's not it. That's not it. That's only the thing. That's only the thing. It's not the whole thing. And nothing, you know, that's not there. So anyhow, here we are. Beautiful world. So the sky is still technicolor. The fog is still thick in San Francisco. The German tourists are still shivering in the streets of the city. I am still here with Teddy, about to continue the show for quite a while yet, after which I'll be walking in the streets of San Francisco with my hat pulled down and my collar pulled up. Why would you want to live anywhere else? Why do I care about the liberal nuts here? They don't bother me. As far as I'm concerned, they're just fodder. The Wall Street Journal wrote an article about me last, a terrible piece of junk. The writer, you know, should be embarrassed. The kid had no capacity as a journalist, nothing. That's what they hired today. I mean, I've had good interviews. The New Yorker was superb. The Playboy article, although it was attempted to be a hit piece, was well written. The guy went after me at every turn. He tried to trap me and couldn't. He fired every bullet in his arsenal, every arrow in his quiver. He tried, and none of them hit me. But it was good. It was a good interview because I enjoyed the challenge. It had depth. This thing from the Wall Street Journal was a joke. You know, the guy, to show you what a poor journalist he was, he writes, oh, he writes in all caps. His emails, he writes in all caps. What's that, an attempt to say I'm illiterate because I use all caps? Yes, I use all caps in my emails. You know why? Because to me, an email to this day is still a telegram. Okay? I know how to write books, schmuck. I'm the author of 25 books. I'm not a journalist for the Wall Street Journal, who got to be very honest with you. What a stupid article the guy writes. But in the article, he says, he asks me a question, which thank God he got this right. And he says, I ask Savage why he lives in such a liberal area, such as San Francisco. How come he lives here? So I said to him, they asked the same thing of Voltaire, why he lived in Paris if he found the foibles of the Parisians so bothersome. Why did he stay in Paris? And he said, because that's what I write about. In other words, I write about the foibles of the Parisians. So I said, that's the reason I stay in San Francisco. What could be better? Where do you want me to live? Where normal people are? What would I have to write about if I lived around normal Americans who love God and country and family? I have nothing to write about. You get it? That's why I live around here. I love this wacko area. So the air, you know, I haven't been banned from San Francisco yet. I mean, I'm still allowed here with the wonderful dental care and the food. There is good food here. I got to tell you something. It is a food city. You got to know where to go, though. You got to stay out of the downtown. The dog's already here stretching. Is it my body motion? Do I give off a certain chemical? He already got up from under the desk. He's giving the four-legged stretch. Looking at me already, he thinks he's going to get the bone for the job he did already, guarding my feet from the imaginary attack. Teddy, you did such a good job. Why do people like to hear about Teddy in the studio? I don't understand it. My dog is like one enzyme away from being a man, a human. There's certain dogs that are so smart, you could almost see them reaching to become like Pinocchio, become a person. It's almost painful to watch. They look at you like they understand every word. Well, I know that he has a larger vocabulary than the average rap star. That I know. I know the dog understands at least 250 words of English. That I can guarantee you. While most of the rap artists use about 30 to 40 words. I don't care if they make $30 million. It doesn't matter to me. It means nothing to me what how much money they make. The variety is the B and the F. And they make $30 million a year. Good luck to them. Good luck to them. My dog understands about 250 words of English.
Savage.
You know, I'm attacked online all the time. I've had rumors spread about me, false accusations, outright untruths. Listen, I have a radio show where I can set the record straight, but you don't. Everyday Americans and businesses deal with this all the time. Let's say you had a youthful indiscretion, a comment taken out of context, inaccurate or unflattering information or pictures posted about you or your business online. What about private information? They can undermine your privacy and hurt your reputation, your career, and even your relationships. But there's something you can do about this. Reputation Defender. Reputation Defender actually manages how you look when someone Googles you. Reputation Defender will continuously monitor everything about you on the web. It will remove your personal information from websites that collect and sell it. It can actually give you control of your Google search results. Go to myprivacy.com and find out more or call them at 800-506-3006. That's 800-506-3006. Promo code SAVAGE. Get a special discount. Myprivacy.com. 800-506-3006. Myprivacy.com. Promo code SAVAGE.
Call Michael now at 1-800-449-8255.
SAVAGE.
I went to Jamaica High School in New York. I didn't even know that they have a reunion. I don't know if they're allowed to have them. If they have them, I wouldn't go anyway. I never liked anyone in that school when I went there. So why should I go see them now? They're probably monsters. They want to see you with the bags under your eyes down to your chin. A guy that was handsome, now they want to take a look at you. Can you imagine? Paul, that's you? Paul, what happened to you? Paul, why haven't you used Botox? Look at what it's done for John Kerry, Paul. A Washington State school district has canceled its annual Halloween celebration because it's insulting to witches. The Wiccan religion is growing to the point where this violates the guidelines on not using derogatory stereotypes against religions, and now Wiccan is considered a religion. Witches are harmless in a way. They're basically women with mustaches who can't find a husband. I never met a witch I didn't like. I mean, it's a matter of what time of month you meet them.
Savage.
This is Michael Savage. I want you to know that freedom of speech is not free. Believe me, courageous radio stations like this one want your advertising dollars to pay their bills and be able to bring you my show and all the others you've come to depend on for the real truth. Talk radio in many ways is America's immune system, but it needs your booster shot. If you're a business, you need to put your money where your heart is. Advertise on this station. And here's the good news. According to Talkers Magazine, ads airing on talk stations like this one generate 2 to 3 times the response from customers than other radio formats would generate. Why? Because talk radio listeners support with their dollars the advertisers that support the radio shows that they love. If you're a business, any kind of business, I don't care if you're a roofer, a plumber, advertise on this station. If you're a listener, do business with the businesses that advertise on my show and others on this station. For more information on how you can buy ads on this station or my show, call 877-474-6605. Write it down, 877-474-6605.
Can you imagine a world without children? A world where children don't play, or dream, or imagine?
At St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, we're working every day to find cures for diseases that strike down children. Because we can't imagine a world without children. Can you?
St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. Call 1-800-931-0800 or log on to stjude.org.
Do you want to experience the full impact of the Michael Savage Show? Become a premium member and get Savage Live, Savage Archives, and the Savage Podcasts. Now you can take the Michael Savage Show anywhere and listen whenever and wherever you want. Get hooked up with the Michael Savage Show today. Go to www.talkradionetwork.com. That's talkradionetwork.com. Click on Savage's picture and sign up now.
Savage. The best network marketers in the world all desire three things from their new MLM opportunity. Products that dial into an untapped global phenomenon, to call on their MLM talents and get the good life fast, and to join early so they can quickly enjoy their dreams. Only top MLM professionals can join our new company now. Before we launch, we need top network marketers who can optimize the leads from our radio campaign to an audience of over 30 million. If you are a proven MLM professional who has earned six figures and achieved top ranks in other MLM companies, act now. Send a text message to 74499 and type MLM in the body of the message. These elite positions will go fast. Send a text message to 74499 and type MLM in the body of the message. Again, send a text to 74499 and type MLM in the message. Message and data rates may apply.
Look, there's no question that the budget is out of control, and it seems to be getting worse by the day. One issue that is not receiving any attention, really, is our educational system. For the last few administrations, their answer to our faltering education system was to throw more money at it. But let's look at a new look, and let's look at some ideas that have actually worked and changes we can make. Speaking with Andrew Colson from the Cato Institute, who says that maybe it's time to end the Department of Education itself.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having me on today. Basically, the mainstream media think you're a radical if you want to abolish the Department of Education. And by itself, that seems to me like a good idea for a good reason for going ahead and doing it. But just abolishing the Department of Education wouldn't really make much difference. The biggest federal education programs already existed before we created the department. And if we got rid of the department, they would just shuffle those programs around to other departments. So it wouldn't accomplish anything by itself. What you really want to do is get the federal government out of the education business altogether. And there's a couple of good reasons for doing that.
Well, I actually don't know about that. What are your reasons for eliminating the Department of Education?
One of them is that the federal government doesn't actually have a constitutional role to play in education, at least in its daily operations, right? Neither the word education nor the word school is mentioned in the U.S. Constitution. And so as a result, power over it is left to the states and the people, or is, at least is supposed to be. And so that's a great reason for getting the federal government out of education. But another one is that we've spent over $2 trillion on federal education programs in the last 40 years and have pretty much nothing to show for it.
Well, at one time, our education system was actually the envy and the best in the world. When did it start to go bad?
Well, it's really been going downhill for a long time, but it's been a slow process. And part of the reason that we haven't fallen further behind other countries is that most other countries have pretty lousy education systems, too. So when we were on top of the stack, it was not that great an achievement. And now that we've fallen behind, it's even more of an indictment. But basically, the way we've been organizing schools for more than 100 years is just a bad idea. We haven't had any progress in education as far as achievement at the end of high school, but we're spending four times as much now on a K-12 education as we did in 1970. That's how much in 1970 it cost $38,000 for a whole K-12 public education, and that's in current dollars. Today it's $150,000. So we're spending four times as much for a K-12 education, and it's not gotten any better that whole time. And in fact, in some ways, it's gotten worse.
Well, why do you think that is?
The problem is that we don't organize schools the way we organize everything else, right? In every other field, people get to decide what they consume, what they buy, and businesses are forced to compete with each other to give people what they want. Education is just a monopoly, and monopolies are always lousy.
Look, we can't trust the government to deliver the mail on time. Why should we have blind trust that they can run the education system?
Yeah, there is a triumph of wishful thinking over sanity that's been going on in this country. Politicians want to be able to show voters that they're doing something. So politicians are like cats. You know, cats are always bringing you gifts like birds and mice, and they want to be appreciated. But really, you don't generally want these things they're bringing you because they don't really help you. That's what politicians are like. They're always bringing you some new federal education program and showing it off, saying, look what I've done for you. Unfortunately, none of these programs actually work. So, as I say, we spent over $2 trillion on federal education programs since around 1965. And the things that were supposed to happen as a result of these programs haven't happened. Either the gaps between different groups haven't closed, educational achievement at the end of high school hasn't risen. So the belief that federal programs are going to improve things is just totally contradicted by the history of the last 40 years.
Well, how do private schools factor in your opinion?
Private schools do a lot better than public schools overall, and it's particularly noticeable when you take spending into account. If you just look at achievement on average, private schools in the U.S. do a little better than public schools, and that's controlling for the kind of students that they enroll. So when you're looking at an apples-to-apples comparison, most of the research finds private schools outperforming public schools. But if you take spending into account, you find out that private schools are doing this for a lot less money than public schools. Public schools spend about 50% more on average than private schools per pupil. So 1.5 times as much public schools spend as private schools. And that's spending. That's not just tuition, but taking all spending into account. Public schools are spending way more, and they're getting inferior results.
How come they spend less but produce better performance?
Oh, it's really simple. Whenever you have businesses competing to serve people, they tend to find better ways and less expensive ways to do it. Because if they don't, somebody else is going to undercut them on price or excel them in quality, and people are going to take their business elsewhere. You don't have an alternative in the public schools. They assign you to your district public school, and that's it. Sometimes there are charter schools, but those are pretty weak tea compared to real free enterprise competition. And so that's the big difference. In the private sector, we've got vigorous competition, we've got innovation, we've got choice, and in the public sector, we've got a monopoly that's a lumbering dinosaur.
What effect does the teachers' union have on all of this?
Yeah, I wrote a paper on this actually earlier this year, and what I found kind of surprised me, it turns out that collective bargaining, union collective bargaining by itself, does very little. If you look at union districts versus non-union districts, the pay is similar, the benefits are similar, the spending is similar. Where unions really make a huge difference is in their massive lobbying campaigns at the state level. They will take their money from mandatory union dues, most states have mandatory union dues, and they will lobby legislators to spend more on public schooling, to hire more teachers, to beef up the power of the union. And so they've been doing this effectively now for going on 40 years, and as a result, they are quashing efforts to give parents choice, right? So they're trying to protect their monopoly position in the public schools, and they are fighting programs like education tax credits and school vouchers that would empower parents to choose private schools.
Are there any signs that things are going to get better?
Oh, absolutely. There is some fantastic stuff going on in Florida in particular. In Florida, they have this program called a scholarship donation tax credit, and it's a fantastic program. What it does is it lets businesses get a big tax cut if they donate money for low-income kids to go to private schools. So the business just says, I owe $200,000 in taxes. I'm going to spend $100,000 in a donation to a nonprofit scholarship fund for K-12 education for poor kids. And they get a $100,000 tax cut as a result of that donation. So the donation doesn't cost them anything. And then suddenly, all these low-income families now have financial assistance if they want to escape the public schools and go to a private school. And this is a hugely popular program. When it was passed in Florida, only one Democrat supported it. Now nearly half of the Democrats in the legislature support this program because it's so obviously working.
Well, are there any other states that show any promise at all?
Well, there's another kind of tax credit program for education that is already operating in Illinois and Iowa. And that's where families get a personal tax cut if they take on the responsibility of paying for their own kids' education. So basically, if you let the taxpayer off the hook so that you're footing the bill for your own kids' education, we cut your taxes. And this is good for everybody because the tax cut is usually not for the full amount of public school spending. In fact, very far from it. So it's much less expensive for taxpayers if people are paying for their own kids' education thanks to these tax credits. Great for taxpayers, great for parents because it makes it easier for them to choose a private school if that's what they think is best for their kids. So I think this combination of personal use tax credits for middle-income families and scholarship tax credits for lower-income families can really do a lot, not just to improve education, but to help states balance their budgets.
Where do you think it goes from here?
At the federal level, there's not going to be much progress in education, certainly not positive progress. But at the state level, there are great signs of improvement. This Florida program that I mentioned, the scholarship tax credit program, that was just expanded earlier this year. And in fact, it was set on a track to expand automatically year after year in future. So as that program grows, Florida is going to become a beacon of educational excellence for the nation. And other states are definitely going to want to copy it, especially states that are near Florida and are going to see their businesses and their populations migrating to Florida to take advantage of the improved education system. There are a lot of great things happening in school choice in the U.S., and we have to encourage these programs at the state level.
Have you seen any national movement to get the federal government out of the public education system and give control back to the states?
You know, I think that to date there has not been any national movement to get the federal government out of education, but the Tea Party movement could definitely make a great could make great progress by doing that, by taking that to heart, that goal to heart. The Tea Party movement is all about limited government and fiscal responsibility. Well, the Constitution doesn't accord the federal government any role in education apart from ensuring equal protection of the laws, so all of these federal education programs shouldn't exist in the first place, and that's a Tea Party principle. As for fiscal sanity goes, if we keep spending $150 billion of federal money every year on education programs and getting nothing for it, that's fiscal insanity, and that's something that the Tea Party is also against. So I really think that the Tea Party movement can lead this charge for getting the federal government out of the education business and allowing states to create much more effective programs to replace any that we really want to keep.
Andrew Coulson, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
And thanks a lot for having me on. It was a pleasure.
Look, we need to keep focused on things that will help our country grow stronger. What is that? Simply less debt and a better educational system is certainly a beginning and a good start. I'll be right back. It's the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Here's some headlines. Third world Britain? Well, that's an aspiration, not an insult. Some people actually want it to become a third world nation. The Ground Zero Imams group said that they trained a New York Times mosque reporter to write articles that were favorable. Oh, yeah, I'm really surprised by that. Newsweek to American guys. We can learn some lessons from Europe on how to be a man. It's coming from Newsweek. Young voters say to Democrats, it is over. We're not voting for you anymore. The debt is too great.
Youth in revolt.
The Muslim Brotherhood's congressman is known as Representative Keith Ellison, a Democrat from Minnesota. And finally, and this is a big story, some conservative senators are on to Big Sis, Napolitano, with her spaghetti and meatballs. They're saying she's allowing a backdoor amnesty. That's it from the Savage Nation. Look, I know you worry about what's going on in Afghanistan, what's going on in the White House, but with all of that, you shouldn't have to worry about your computer on top of everything else. So go visit my advertisers at Carbonite.com. They'll back up all your important files so they're safe no matter what happens. Use my offer code SAVAGE, and you're going to get 2 months free with your subscription. That's Carbonite.com, offer code SAVAGE. You know, Nancy Pelosi thinks that the Dems have the midterms won. I mean, you can't believe this.
The momentum is with us. We are out there to dispel many of the misrepresentations that have been going on for nearly 2 years by the Republicans and the special interest, whether it's the oil industry, the health insurance industry, the banks, and their allies. And we are out there. Our members are great, articulate spokespersons for their point of view into their districts. And district by district, we feel very confident about the election. And we believe that 6 weeks from
today,
we will have no regrets, but instead we will have a great Democratic victory.
6 weeks, there's going to be a great Democratic victory. But it's going to be in Mongolia, not with you as leader of the House.
Many of the people will be getting this tax cut, will inject it back into the economy, injecting demand into the economy, creating jobs. Tax cuts at the high end have not done that, as we can see in the Bush years. They just did not accomplish that. They're very expensive. They are geared to a small percentage of the population. They take us deeply into debt to countries like China. I'm a grandmother. I don't want to send any personal bills or public bills to my grandchildren.
And here once again is the new clean green Al Gore version of Bill Clinton.
I went on essentially a plant-based diet. I live on beans, legumes, vegetables, fruit. I drink a protein supplement every morning. No dairy. I drink almond milk mixed in with fruit and a protein powder. So I get the protein for the day when I start the day out. And it changed my whole metabolism, and I lost 24 pounds. And I got back to basically what I weighed in high school.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
We now have 25 years of evidence.
Wait.
And so I thought, well,
yes, we do.
Since I need to lose a little weight.
25 years of proof that you have a mental disorder.
I'll become part of this experiment. I'll see if I can be one of those that can have a self-clearing mechanism.
Self-clearing? Just by eating vegetables? Well, that's what some of the popular books say. But I can tell you that there's some that say it doesn't work. It's not as easy as becoming a Brer Rabbit. Turban Durbin still has his head in the sand. But he did bring it up about the DREAM Act.
We have, within our borders,
pull it out of the sand for the DREAM
thousands
Act.
Of young people who were brought to the United States by their parents at an early age. I don't know what it was like in their homes, but there weren't many Democratic votes when I was 5 years old as to where we were going to go for vacation. I went where I was told.
Representing illegal aliens who want to go to college on your dime.
Cesar Vargas came to the United States at the age of five, brought here by his mom and dad from Mexico, graduated the regular public schools of New York.
Wait,
and
stop.
Then
see, that's the problem right there.
Graduated the regular public schools of New York.
Why was this illegal alien put through public school with taxpayer dollars? And then he went to...
And then went on to graduate from college.
Graduate school for free?
And then went on to graduate from college.
Can you believe this?
Now, it was more difficult for him because he's undocumented.
Hello?
So he couldn't get any federal aid to education. No Pell Grants, no federal student loans. But he made it.
Listen, Mr. Durbin and Mr. Sis.
And after 9/11, I'd say to the presiding officer...
Who do you work for?
He said to us this morning... Because of my
the
deep
non-taxpaying
commitment to
illegal immigrants should be removed, not rewarded. I don't have patience. I have no patience, and I don't like martinets with drills to top it off. Okay? Who likes to wait? So I book a dead day. I specifically say, give me a time, blah, blah, say 11, and I call in advance. Is he ready? Is he on time today? Yeah, he's on time. So I go in there. The office has chairs like a Purdue chicken mill, like eight in a row with no... Not even a barrier between you and the other patient gurgling and puking into a dish with blood splatters. It's disgusting. But I need something done. He's the guy who put in the pin that broke about a year and a half ago. So I want to get a new pin put in because he then put in. So I go back to the quack. And there's no one in there. There's one guy. So I sit here and then put the bib on, which I thought was odd because it was only for like a quick checkup. I'm sitting there. Okay. So I said, don't be impatient. I'm watching the clock. I can't help it. It's ticking. It's 2 to 11. Now it's 11. And he's in his little office there on a phone call, which I love. I love when doctors, that you talk about doctors and dentists becoming so abusive to their patients that they let you listen to them talking on a telephone while you're sitting in a damn chair, laying there with looking at a clock. So I'm sitting. It's already 5 after 11. I said, don't get up. I have to talk to myself. Don't be abrupt. He knows who you are. He knows you're a busy guy. He knows you have to prepare a show. Why is he doing this to you? He comes out. I'm already standing already with the bib. The bib is attached like a pablum bib. And I'm staring at his office. I don't like to sit when I'm waiting. I don't have patience. So I'm standing now already staring at his office. He comes out. He says to me, how are you? And he walks right past my stall and goes to some other guy and starts to work on him. So I said, wait a minute. I said to the woman, I said, what is he doing here? I have an 11 o'clock appointment. She says, so does he. I said, well, why would he double book? She says, you'll have to ask him. I march out with the bib on. I was so infuriated. I marched right out. So they run after me. Oh, Michael. I said, here's the bib. I forgot it. I got so mad I walked out with the bib. He won't be seeing me anymore for that $12,000 dental job, doctor of death over there. And I'll tell you something else. You owe me an apology if this gets back to you. I won't give away your name or your office, but you're going to go out of business if you keep up this abusive behavior. Dentist.
Savage.